Being the big vinyl lover that I am, I'm proud to tell you about Joe's Albums in their two locations. The original shop at 317 Main Street in downtown Worcester, Massachusetts, and their second location out in Western Mass at 5 Market Street, Northampton. Both of these shops are loaded with both new and used vinyl. It's hard to walk in either shop and walk out empty-handed due to their amazing collection of records and other cool goodies like t-shirts, mugs, posters, etc. If you can't find what you're looking for in the retail stores, check out their website, joesalbums.com. Thank you, Joe, for being so cool. Welcome to Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico, episode number 308. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. This week, drummer extraordinaire Jesse Mayer returns to the show to talk about Diablo Gato's great new song, Lost Highway, which you just heard. Fantastic track. There's also a fantastic video. Diablo Gato continues to make great music, and this single may be their best yet. And upon hearing the track, to me, it was just an opportunity to get one of my favorite people back on the show, that being Jesse Mayer. You know, the timing was really good too. I've been going through a bit of a rough patch lately, personally. I mean, so it helps to talk to someone that has seen it all, has done it all, and by the way, come out on the other side in pretty good shape. You know, Jesse is pretty frank about his past issues with substance abuse. He talks about that again on the show today, and his recovery has been great. And he's he's a good human being, basically. 40 years of rock and roll is not always the easiest road, and he survived all that. And we've been friends for a long time. We met back in 1985. That's a long time ago. Really was another time and place. I remember the first time, in fact, we met, and we have talked about this before, and when he was on the show, it was outside the Rat Skeller, the Rat, in Kenmore Square. I think it might have been an outlet show. I think we were both a bit disheveled at the time. It was the 80s, after all. I was visiting from L.A., and he was in town. I think he was in Finger Paint still. I'll have to ask him about that. Could have been Shake the Faith, but it was right around that period. And we were both young, and we were pretty entrenched in our rock and roll lifestyles at that time. So we have a long history, and our conversations always become effortless after a little while. We actually even talked afterwards about Jesse possibly co-hosting one of these future episodes, and I think that would be great. I would love to have him here as a co-host on a show, no doubt. All right. I could ramble on and on about this, but why don't we get to it? Here I am with Jesse Mayer. Welcome to those of you watching on YouTube. This is Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. If you want to hear this entire show with intros, outros, and music, please go to Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, etc. Please welcome to the show my friend, your friend, everybody's friend, Jesse Mayer.
I don't know whether that's true, but...
And I knew you were going to say that. I knew you were going to say.
Well, you know, it's a fact. Not everyone loves me.
For you folks out there listening, we've already been talking about all kinds of stuff for like 20 minutes. I want to remember some of the things that we talked about so I can bring them back up. But you know what I was thinking about? Before we get into Diablo Gato and your great new single, Lost Highway, I was thinking about this morning. You've been playing in a band in every decade since the 80s, right? Pretty much?
Pretty much. I mean, I was inactive for a good chunk of the 90s because it's really hard to be a heroin addict and play in a band or do anything. Or I found heroin addiction to be kind of an impediment to doing anything but heroin. So
that's understandable. I thought you were going to say, because I know you had some medical issues as well.
That was 4 years ago.
That was only 4 years ago?
Yeah, when I had cancer.
Yeah, it seems like so much longer than that.
Yeah. It was 2019 in the winter of 2020, and I'm the luckiest bastard in the world. So I will say this to the audience. Early detection is everything, particularly if you're a smoker or you ever smoked, get a CAT scan on your lungs. The only reason I'm here is they caught it early.
And I'm happy about that.
It was lung cancer. And I have my entire lungs and I'm completely healthy.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, other than that I'm insane, it's all good.
I think maybe the reason I thought it was longer ago is because 2020 lasted about 4 years. So.
It was followed by the pandemic. But yeah, I mean, I've been active, you know, since really the early 80s, through the late 80s, some of the 90s, early 90s, later 90s, I just was a mess and got clean in the late 90s.
Tell me if I've left anyone off this list. Finger Paint, Shake the Faith. These are not in order, obviously.
Oh my God, we're going to do this.
Caged Heat, The Marvels, The Von Kenmores, Wild Zero, New Alibis. You know what's really funny is just the other day I saw a video of the New Alibis doing a violent femme song. It was great. Kiss Off.
Kiss Off. Probably it's probably a video from the Rumble.
Oh, that's from the Rumble?
Yeah, I believe so. And the funny thing was, that night, two bands covered that song.
Are you serious?
Yeah. A band called The Motion Sick.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. So it was like the Battle of the Violent Femmes covers.
Mark Lind and the Unloved and Diablo Gatto. I'm sure I forgot someone. Who did I forget?
Oh, shit. Pug Uglies, Dry County Sorrow, Ragged Old Flag, Jaya the Cat. I have a new project. It's a side project with Ian Clark. Audrey Clark is his mom.
Oh, yeah.
Ian's incredibly talented, and Swid and Andy Excuse from Hammered Saint, tentatively called Dead Eyes.
You and Andy in the rhythm section. That's cool.
No, Andy's playing rhythm guitar. Swid's playing bass.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Andy's an animal rhythm guitar player. He's such a good dude, but we're just fooling around having fun, you know? But it's cool. I mean, Ian writes incredible material, and he's clean now. And just in this creative thing. And I got a phone call from him. I was like, sure.
That's awesome. So going back to this list, was Finger Pain actually the first band?
No, the first punk band I was ever in was in Northampton. It was a band called RUR that had, we didn't know it at the time. And we were like a really shitty version of X.
Oh.
And what happened was I was at Hampshire College at the time with Byron Coley and Brett Milano and Jerry Channel. And I was a film and video major. And I hadn't been playing drums since high school. In high school, I played a lot with Stephen Paul Perry, rest in peace. He was amazing at 15. But I was shooting bands. I was shooting bands, videoing bands, open reel, half inch, black and white, as the whole punk thing was really exploding. And shooting a lot of stuff at the Blue Wall at UMass, Rawhars, which was this incredible punk club in Northampton, and the Rusty Nail in Sunderland.
So many cool people have come from Western Mass.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were out there.
So one night, actually, I took my friends to see the best band in the world. This is like 1979. And the best band in the world at that time was The Neighborhoods at the Rusty Nail.
I was wondering what band you were going to say.
It was The Hoods, the original Hood. And the opening band was this trio that didn't have a bass player. They had a keyboard player, a drummer, and this insane whirling dervish of a front man. That was Casey Lindstrom. It was New Models. And we became acquainted, and they were like, you got to come to Boston, you got to come to Boston, you got to come to Boston. So I dropped out of school and joined the circus. And here we are.
And you've been in it ever since.
Yeah.
I just wanted to mention that because I was trying to think of a lot of those I thought of off the top of my head. I knew I had forgotten one prevalent band, and that's when I went to look for the New Alibis, and they were the one, because I remember that band being really cool. Absolutely. And I know you've played probably on other records and with a lot of other people as well, you know, besides what I mentioned.
It's amazing how far I've gotten with shitty technique.
I wouldn't say that, Jesse.
Oh, I would, but
that brings me to an interesting question. I don't know if we talked about this last time. I don't think so, but who was some of your biggest drummer influences when you were younger, and even now, you know, I mean, so it could be some of the same now as it was then, but do you remember who really got your ear and said, you know, I like that style, I think I want to do that?
This will speak directly to the shitty technique. When I was a little kid, I really didn't have any friends. I was an only child. It's kind of a weird upbringing. like my best friend was an ima- was a family of imaginary raccoons. And I started playing drums on my mother's metal trash cans upside down. And then I started buying, I had a paper route, and I got a Kent snare drum and a hi-hat and some kick drum. And I had headphones and a record player. Charlie Watts, The Beatles, Cream, Hendrix, all classic rock. But all I wanted to do was play to those records. The only time I ever had drum lessons, I was probably about 12. I thought about this because we were playing in Weymouth yesterday. And my mother would take me to Quincy. We lived in Cohasset at the time, to take drum lessons from this big band drummer named Frank Shushan. He was all a gruff big band drummer who gave me, you know, the book on rudiments and the stick control and all the homework, which of course I didn't want to do. And I wish I had. All I wanted was the last 5 minutes of every lesson. He had a drum set and you could get on the set and play.
Right.
So I never learned that stuff. My hands are terrible. My independence is terrible. It sucks. And it really, in some respects, limits me. But on the other hand, my pocket and groove and musicality and ultimately drumming. I was talking to Bruce Corporal about this the other day. He's now in the Chelsea Curve. It's always about the song. It's not about, at least in basic rock and roll, it's about understanding what the song wants and getting inside of it and driving that fucker.
Yeah.
So, you know, drummers I really love are drummers I can relate to. Paul Cook from the Pistols, wonderful drummer.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Rudd, AC/DC. I've been obsessed with Steve Gorman, who's no longer in the Black Crowes, lately trying to play his stuff.
Really?
Oh my God. He was so good. So good. My favorite, maybe some of my favorite Boston drummers, the late Dustin Hickst, who played with Damone, played on Blood for Blood, Outlaw Anthems. That dude had it all, man. He had power. He had chops. He could rock. He could swing. He had feel. He was amazing. There's a million great drummers out there.
You said you were listening to the Beatles and Cream, and I can't remember who the other one was, but playing along with Ginger Baker, I mean, that's got to be kind of a challenging thing to try and do, right?
It's a weird thing. I wonder if I could fake my way through Disraeli Gears.
He's such a jazz drummer.
I know. And I can't play double kick for shit. I'm not interested in it.
Yeah, I watch you. I've watched you play him so many times. And, you know, you're not sloppy at all. You're just a very straightforward, in the pocket kind of drummer, kind of like a Ringo kind of drummer rather than a Keith Moon kind of drummer. Am I right when I say that?
I'd say neither, because Ringo, the thing about Ringo, I wish I was that creative. Listen to what he plays on something like Rain or the intro to Come Together. That's the genius of Ringo. You know, like incredibly musical. And you can pull up Ringo stuff like, my thing's more like Phil Rudd, AC/DC.
Okay.
That's where I don't make my living, is in the pocket, you know? And I've been fortunate to work with people. I remember like going to record the recording sessions for Mark Lynde and the Unloved when we were recording Last Bastion. And I'm driving to the studio and, you know, I have imposter syndrome. I think most recovering addicts do. Like, if you really knew what a shitbag I really am and how much I really suck, you would want nothing to do with me. It's just old trauma and old tapes. And I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, I Marks played with all Dustin Hengst and Messina and Mark Cannata and all these incredible drummers. What am I doing? I'm out of my league. And then I'm like, dude, you've played on like 13 records since you got clean. You've played on like 13 records over 40 years old. Just
Wow.
Going, you know?
That's amazing.
Actually, sort of my second career has been way more productive than my first one. My post 40 has been more productive and more
Interesting.
fun. And also, you know, when you're young, and especially when you were young in the, maybe now, but in the 80s, you know how it was. The whole thing was you wanted to get that deal. You wanted to get that major label deal. You wanted to get completely fucked in a big advance. And you wanted a tour bus instead of a van. And you wanted to make it. And so many of us got so close.
Yeah.
And then some of us got the deal and got destroyed. And there were so few of us that came out of it. Boston was lousy with great, great bands. I mean, we could sit and take a whole podcast going from the Hoods to the Outlets to, you know, Till Tuesday, at least they had a platinum record, to Tribe, to whoever. And then, you know, now, and this kind of will dovetail into some stuff about Diablo Gatto and stuff we were texting about this morning. It's not about that at all.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to ask you, I'm going to interrupt you for a second because I wanted to ask you, do you feel like you missed out on something? Do you feel like you didn't achieve your goal? Because I know you've been wanting to make it in rock and roll.
No, not at all.
So you don't feel like you've got gypped?
Dude, I'm in my 60s. I'm playing shows. I'm in a band that's relatively popular. We're super creative. There's nobody else like us.
That's true.
You know, like that's part of the magic of Diablo Gatto. This is the first band I've ever been in that is so standalone that there's nobody like it.
So the thought of making it big, one of the, like in one of the bands from the past, Shake the Faith, whoever, the fact that it didn't happen doesn't stay in the back of your mind. Like,
absolutely
we
not.
We missed out on opportunities, you know, or.
No, absolutely not. The fact that I made it out alive is amazing, you know, and no, absolutely not.
And do you feel that from some of your peers that are around?
That they're bitter?
Yeah.
I think some people are. And I think some people are trying. Ooh, this is a slippery slope.
We can slide a little.
If people are interested in really revisiting, I don't want to play with the people. I mean, I like playing with Casey and Todd and I will occasionally do a reunion. I'm more in the Rick Barton school on this. I don't loathe reunions to the point that Rick does.
Sure does.
Which sucks because every time I've seen the Outlets do a reunion, they're amazing. They may be my favorite local band of all time, but I'm
me
not,
too, believe it or not.
Oh, I totally believe they were a brilliant, brilliant band. And what Dave's doing now is a complete other story. But I'm not interested in looking back.
That's good, man. I was hoping you'd say that because there are some people out there that are bitter. But I didn't really mean, I guess what I was getting at originally wasn't bitterness. It was more like of a frustration of like, because we know a lot of bands that have gotten signed and they've just gone nowhere. Because it doesn't always mean if you get a record deal, you're going to end up being huge. I don't know why, but I was thinking about Carl Coletti. And, you know, Carl.
I thought about Carl. We were playing with the Shanghai Lows. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you'll
it's okay.
We were playing with the Shangs at Faces a couple of weeks ago. And of course, Lee Harrington's the bassist.
Yes.
And Lee and I were hanging out and we were talking about the Hoods. And I said, let's take a selfie and give Dave the finger, right? So there's me and Lee, like, and I send it to Dave, who I hadn't spoken to in like several years. But I thought about Carl Coletti that night. And we were talking about the drummers that had been in the Hoods. But go on about Carl.
I was going to say, you know, he was in that band, The Walkers, that I knew nothing about. And he told me the story. They got like $350,000 to live off of for a year. And when the year was over and they blew all the money on recording and living and everything, they got dropped from the label. Then he joins the Neighborhoods. We tried really hard to get Atlantic behind that record, but Atlantic could not. They just weren't into it. They didn't live up to their promises. They said, well, you get us a deal. I mean, you get us a good tour. That's what, because I was at Third Stone, you know, we were a subsidiary of Atlantic. You
was
get
that,
us a good tour.
That Hoodwinked? Was that Hoodwinked? Which record was that? Hoodwinked?
This is the one that came out, Hoodwinked with redone versions of Prettiest Girl and Pure and Easy, which, by the way, I wasn't in favor of doing, but that's what they wanted to do. They wanted to re-record those. So I'm not a big fan of taking a hit song like that and re-recording it because it didn't go far enough. But the point I'm getting at here is Carl once again gets his major label deal and everything, and the whole thing falls apart. You know, so I think about guys like that and what they, unfortunately, rest in peace. Carl's no longer with us, but we talked about that and he dealt with it pretty well, but it was also frustrating, you know, and that's what I was getting at. You know,
I'm going to tell you my one regret. I have one regret in the music business, and it is, after Shake the Face ended, I got the opportunity to play in a band that had been a band called The Drive. Yeah, Big Boston band.
The Drive, yeah.
But they completely shifted gears, and they were going alt Americana, Replacements, and changing their name. And we were playing a whole lot of gigs. It was Paul and Jamie and Jim and Tim and me. And we were playing like three sets a night at the Beachcomba and Quincy Kid. We were playing all over New England. We were in a van coming back from a show in Connecticut. And they were trying to rename the band. And I'm in the back of the van. And I said, you know, why not the Swinging Stakes? Like, you know, like Balls. And I was kidding. And that band became the Swinging Stakes.
I didn't realize that. Yes. Wow, they're still playing. They're popular.
And I got offered the full-time gig, but I was too much of a rock guy. I didn't really get it. I was like, I'm going to go to LA and audition for the Cult, you know, which I had a kind of an opportunity to do, but I couldn't even make it on the plane. I wouldn't have gotten the gig anyway, but, you know.
You never know.
I turned the gig down. Super good guys, some of the best musicians and songwriters I've ever played with. They get signed to Capricorn. They tour all over the place. They did a really cool tour in Japan. And they're still a going entity. And the thing is, they're so good.
Yeah.
That every time I see those dudes, I'm like, you are the biggest... biggest mistake. You were the prettiest girl I ever turned my back on. Like, I wouldn't, you know, I'm glad where I am now, but that was a fuck up.
Do they credit you for helping them with their name?
I think if anybody asked them, yeah.
That's awesome.
It's a terrible name.
I know, I don't like it either. But you know, they have had quite a career. There's no doubt about that. Diablo Gato.
Yes.
10 years now, right?
Yeah, amazing. Who knew?
This is living proof that I listen to other podcasts and interviews, because you said this on another podcast that I heard. You said Diablo Gato, sometimes I have trouble saying that, is, and I quote, the best cohesive overall artwork that I have experienced, unquote. I love that quote.
Without question.
Tell me what you mean. You know, in between the lines here.
Okay. Diablo Gatto, because we landed on something because of just where we were at. And I don't want to sound pretentious about this. We kind of came up with a style of rock and roll that draws from rockabilly, it draws from Southern Gothic, it draws from punk rock, it draws from garage, it even draws from grunge sometime. Like if you listen to the heavy turnarounds in Lost Highway, that's very grunge. It sounds like an Alice in Chains riff. Where we sort of took all these elements, and what over the years has come out is something that completely belongs to us. At the same time, we've been incredibly lucky. One, Chuck McSteven, our lead guitar player, is an amazing graphic artist. It started with the logo, where we have this incredibly identifiable, that three-eyed cat.
It's a great logo.
The flyers and the merch and everything. There's a huge visual element to the band, because then we luck out in 2019 and start making videos with Sean Riley. And we have four like really seriously produced high production value, super cool videos that all are about going deeper and deeper into this little world that we've created of like Gatto world, this place of fear and loathing and weirdness that doesn't take itself too seriously, where Drew will wear like four wigs in a video. He was amazing doing that, but bands I really love, take X for instance, there's a whole artistic aesthetic. You know it's them. Anything connected with X, you know it's them. To an extent, the Boss Tones, anything connected with them, from the Bulldog to the Suits, where they kind of did a thing where they took ska and they took skate punk. You know, they took Madness and Gangrene and threw it together and came up with the Boss Tones. Bands that do that are Queens of the Stone Age. They have that, you know? And I'm not trying to put Diablo Gatto on a level with those bands. We do what we can with the time we have. But I've been in at least 25 bands. This is the only one that's done that.
I could only think of 15. Damn.
You know, but I think that has a lot to do with why it's shocking to us that we've lasted 10 years. Drew and I have been making music together for almost 15 years because of the new Alibi.
Yeah.
And
have Charlie and Johnny been with you guys since day one?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Absolutely. And it's just sort of come out that way. So, you know, we realize that there's a certain zeitgeist that we have. And as long as it keeps moving forward, as long as we keep developing ideas and not retreading old shit, and as long as we're having fun and there's some kind of an audience for it, I guess we'll keep doing it. But the other thing, and I was thinking about this in the shower this morning, is luck and timing.
That's the music business, right?
I was just going to say, I was once having a conversation. Do you know Keith Gard?
Keith Gard, yeah.
Aerosmith management team.
Yeah.
I was talking to Keith one day about Aerosmith. And he said, you know, frankly, really, half of it was luck and timing. They had more luck and more timing than you've had. Diablo Gatto has had incredible luck in timing with the people who've come along and showed up and worked with us. And whether it was Jack Younger on the first records, Mark Lind at State Line Records, Lou Mansdorf at Rumbar Records, Michael Murata, our publicist, Sean Riley, who is our recording engineer, our video producer, that whole scene at Doghouse in Waltham. Like since 2019, we've done all of our work there. And these people have shown up, and they're really nice people, and they totally understand what we're trying to do, and they're into it. That's a very lucky band. That doesn't happen.
They say, in the music industry, the way to get somewhere is to surround yourself with talent. And that's what you've done. You've surrounded yourself with all these talented people. I know m most of those people, and they're all really, I've never met Sean Riley, but I know the other guys. Murat is probably the best publicist around. Lou's a solid individual. Jack, you mentioned. Jack, is Jack still around?
I just saw Jack post on Facebook. He is up in Essex, recovering from the traumatic experience of 30 years in the music business. Watch City is no more. He lost the building. I love
Oh,
Watch City.
it's too
I
bad.
love it. And boy, did I love Jack's drum sound. Fascinating.
I remember he when he was, I think he was a sound man at Bill's bar, one of those bars on Lansdowne Street. That's when I met him.
But Jack's doing good. I was just his birthday. So, and he was sort of posting a reflect. If you go on his Facebook page, you'll see it. You'll see it. Say hi to him. But
I will.
yeah,
I might. I wouldn't mind getting him on this podcast, actually, because he's a good guy.
he'd be an awesome guest.
I
But
would.
we've really been lucky. I mean, without that support system, it's pretty tough to get anywhere.
You guys started in 2014. You put that self-titled record on 2016. Paint the Devil on the Wall, 2006. Old Scratch, one of my favorite songs is that song, Blasphemy? Blasphemy. I think that's on Old
Love that.
Scratch. Old Scratch, right?
And there's a video for that too.
Yeah, I
Holy
remember seeing
crap.
that. Your drumming on that is great. The opening drum beat on that song is fantastic. And now, we've got. My God, there's so much to talk about with Lost Highway because you made me. Well, I got this about a week ago, I think, from Lou, and I went and it made me think of the movie Lost Highway. There's got to be a connection here. There's got to be, and we're going to talk about that. And I went and watched the clip. I'm a big Bill Pullman fan. I don't know if you saw the David Lynch movie Lost Highway.
Yeah, of course.
And I like Bill Pullman, but how can you forget Robert Blake's performance in that movie? He had his face white, Beretta. Didn't he murder his wife or something?
Yes, he did.
Crazy when you think about that. So tie this all together for me. It seems like there's some sort of a connection here. Well, before that, let me ask you about the songwriting process in the band, because I wanted to get to that first. Do you guys write together? Does Drew bring the songs in? Do you do this in a rehearsal space? What's the songwriting process?
There's sort of three elements to it. Most of the time, it comes out of a riff. Chuck will have a riff and we'll be like, that's interesting. And then we'll start to develop it and start building a song around it. And we record absolutely everything. It's an iPhone recording.
Nice.
And then we'll catalog it and go back to it. And the riff starts to develop into a song, and we'll send it to Johnny. Johnny lives in Rhode Island, so he's not at that many rehearsals. It's just not for him. And he'll start figuring out what he's doing. And then the lyrics generally come from either Drew or me, which is really weird because Drew's the only singer whose mouth I've ever put words in. But I know the way that he sings. And sometimes things will change a little bit. And sometimes things will just appear. Occasionally, Drew will bring in a song like it's been a while, but Boston Blood, Memphis Heart, the one that Little Steven played. I think Drew brought that in pretty much as a finished song. But that's rare. He does it once in a while. And they're always good. But generally, it's out of jamming and bouncing riffs around and finding a vibe. And lyrics come.
Have you built a big catalog of songs that you could pick from before you go in a studio, say?
We have a big catalog of things that are almost finished, things that are ideas. The frustrating thing, the only thing that frustrates me about this band, and probably frustrates everybody else about this band, is because we have jobs, lives, kids, dogs, is that our creative process is painfully slow. Because we'll be on a writing bender and then shit happens. Drew's got to travel for work. I'm swamped. Chuck's swamped. Johnny's got something going, and we won't do anything for 2 months. And then we've got to go back, or we're working on stuff, but it's like, hey, let's make a video for something that was in the can for a year. You know, when this EP comes out, Jet Black Night, the last video, that'll be on the EP because it's unreleased. It's 6 songs. 2 of them are already videos, and the EP will come out late summer or the fall. These are songs that were recorded a year ago and 2 years ago that have been in our live set for that long. Fortunately, as far as airplay, satellite radio, pod, you know, internet play, none of that shit matters anymore. Nobody cares when it came out, and that's cool.
You're right.
That's the Wild West you and I were texting about.
And you know what else, Jesse? I interview bands at a lot of different levels, you know, like bands that were famous in the 80s and the 90s. And everyone that's under like retirement age is actually doing what you guys are doing. They're all working other jobs. Nobody can live. I mean, you might get the big check here and there or the licensing deal here and there, but you're not getting regular income unless you're like on the road 200 days a year.
And then still you're not. You know, it's funny because I was hanging out with Slick from, you know, horn player from the Kings of Nothing yesterday. He was at the show. We played this crazy show in Weymouth with this like fetish fair. It was awesome. But he was talking about how broke the Kings of Nothing were when they were touring Europe. Like they were starving. It's interesting. Do you know who the Delta Bombers are?
Delta Bombers. Yeah. I don't.
They were the only other band in the sort of rockabilly scene remotely like us. The only other one where they were a little more honky tonk and country, but they looked like us. They weren't playing 50s dress up. They looked like punks. And they've toured relentlessly for 10 years. And I'm sure aren't making any money. And some stuff just happened with them where it's a weird thing. They fired their lead singer. We'll see how that all shakes out. But Kevin Patey was saying to me, you guys are so poised to walk into to fill that void of the Delta Bombers. And I was like, dude, we can't tour like that. But they're not making any, there's no money out there.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you go, it's only worth it if you're main support for a bigger band. And if you're main support for a bigger band, they're paying you like $200 a night. You got to pay for gas. You got to pay for lodging. You got to pay for all of that.
Food.
Like if we could do some like fly in, fly out festivals, and I don't know whether we could get there. And we got to pay for our, you know, our lodging. If it's backlined, maybe we have to pay for our plane ticket or something, and we can play a festival. We'll do that. If we could go to Europe for 2 weeks, the only shot we ever had at going to Europe, the promoter wanted 4 weeks. We can't do that. I can't lose my job, man. I'm a sign installer.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in the trades.
Yeah. And you know, the reason I brought, you know, I was just pointing out to you that you guys are not alone. There's so many bands that are out there that have to work full-time jobs and to keep their bands going. And you said you played yesterday. It was a daytime show, I hope.
Yeah.
Okay, because doing a 9 o'clock in the morning podcast after a show, although at our age, it's a little easier to get up in the morning, you know?
It's a little harder to sleep.
Yeah, let's tie this thing. Yeah, really, I forget about sleep issues. Let's talk about Lost Highway, because I want you to pull this whole thing together for me. And the reason I brought up the film Lost Highway is because I didn't know if people listening actually are aware of this. But you can't watch the video and not think about David Lynch, if you know who he is, because it's got that spooky feel to it. Was this meant to, is this what you were looking for, or did it just turn out this way?
Oh man, it's a direct homage to David Lynch. It's not just Lost Highway. What happened was we were sitting around in a Zoom production meeting with Sean. We're like, we really want to do a video for Lost Highway. We haven't put a video out for a year. We need to do a video. We need to put something out. What do you want to do? Well, we don't have a lot of money, so probably, in studio performance video of some kind. We're talking, and I said, what if we started with the In Dreams sequence, Dean Stockwell in Blue Velvet? Here's to your fuck, Frank. When he sings In Dreams into a drop, he's lip syncing In Dreams into a drop like Dennis Hopper, which is, and it's really fucking evil and freaky and weird and camp. So we start pulling that up. Drew's like, I can do that. Which developed farther. Drew is a, we all love David Lynch. Drew is a huge, obsessive David Lynch freak, Twin Peaks in particular. So this whole thing develops. So, well, what if we put Ben from Blue Velvet in the Red Room from the doppelganger scene in the Black Lodge in Twin Peaks? So, okay, we can do that. And Drew says, I have a Killer Bob costume, which is with all the long gray hair, Killer. So Sean says, fuck yes, because he's a filmmaker. Fuck yes. So he starts studying Lynch. He's looking for a chevron carpet, like the floor of the Red Room.
Yeah.
You can only find one that's like 11 by 8. It's not big enough. Fuck it. I'm painting the floor. So he and Ben Pease paint the floor of the studio. They painted it. Chevron, the red drapes, Drew's got the costumes, and Johnny and Chuck and I were trying to figure it out. And I'm taking my cues from Frank Booth. I'm the evil guy, but I don't look anything like Dennis Hopper, but I do look a little like Hunter Thompson, and I do look a little like Walter White. So, I get the collar tips and a death's head moth bolo tie and yellow aviators, shaved head, look spooky. And in we go. Meanwhile, Sean is obsessively looking at the color saturation, the editing, all of that. So the video, if you really know David Lynch, you know every Easter egg that's in there. And if you go further and you go back to the blasphemy video with the preacher, he's huffing a gas mask.
Oh,
That's Frank Booth in Blue Velvet. That's where the gas. So there's this sort of, he's huffing the gas mask in that video. And we're in this sort of netherworld that becomes, we're in the crystal ball and the fortune when he shows up at the fortune teller in the Jet Black Knight video, when Ben gets sucked into the crystal ball, we're in the crystal ball. So it's going sort of deeper and deeper and deeper into, for us, into Gatto world. This is this fucked up world that we exist in.
See, I'm not as versed on David Lynch as you guys obviously are. I did like the movie Lost Highway. I mean, I thought that was just absolutely fantastic. And like I said, I went back and watched that clip just because I wanted to see the scene where Robert Blake meets Bill Pullman in the movie, and it's just crazy. So you guys got off to a really good start. I mean, it came out, what, a few days ago, and it's already getting viewed a lot. And I'm sure a lot of people are going to pick it up. I mean, and this is on your new EP. What's the new EP called?
Don't know yet.
You don't know yet? Okay.
It's done. We haven't thought about it yet.
Rumbar?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Lou's a good guy to work with. Wow. So this is great, man. You're
What should
like
we call the EP, Steve?
what? Swinging Stakes Part Two. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. I'd have to think about that, man. I mean, I like Law. I mean, Law. I mean, Lost Highway is a great title. If you guys can somehow get on David Lynch's radar, that would be fantastic. Is he still alive? I'm sorry. Is he
Yeah,
alive?
I believe so. Yeah. And I don't know whether anything's happened with that, but we work with really smart people. And Lou said, "Hey, are there any David Lynch Twin Peaks fan sites?
That's
Because
good.
we want to see if we can post to that." And of course, Drew said, "Oh, yeah," because Drew's the giantest David Lynch fanboy ever.
Yeah, I would tap into that completely. Oh, you know what
I
I
don't
want
know
to
if
ask you?
anything's been done with that yet.
Yeah, the thing I forgot to ask you is Sean Riley. What's his history? I know you have a history with him, but you said he's a filmmaker. Is
Video
he done
maker,
any film, just videos
yeah,
mostly?
that's that whole Waltham Mafia, Frank Pino,
Oh, okay. Did he do
the
the
Mad
Waltham
Dog.
videos?
What's that?
You worked with Waltham too?
Yeah, and the Dropkick Murphy stuff and the really funny DKM stuff with the puppets.
Oh, okay.
That's all those guys. And he's done videos for a lot of metal bands. Locally, he did a really good one for Gozu. That band rips.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm totally unrelated. From what I understand, a very young band from Lowell called Ghouls tore the roof off of Sonya at the Rumble semifinals on Friday night. Drew was a judge and won. And they're going to the final. So a young band.
Ghouls.
Yeah, Ghouls.
Okay, you know I'm going to be on that as soon as I get off.
Yeah, check them out. It's interesting, but Drew said the show was absolutely blisteringly lovely.
You're giving a band a plug. That's good. I like that.
They're
We
from Lowell.
need to
Yeah.
plug. Lowell's happening, man. I'm going to be up there next weekend. They're having the town, the city festival, and I want to. I've never seen Mini Beast. And Peter Prescott was on the show, and I told him I was going to come to that show. So I'm going to go out. It's a 4 o'clock in the afternoon they're playing. So that's my speed these days, Jesse.
Well, we've played the Words in Attic, and that's a really cool room. The load in and load out sucks. Taffeta is a room we'd really like to play. It's a beautiful room. I love Lowell. We love Lowell. We love Providence. Providence, we play
Yeah.
Providence more than we play Boston. Providence is still gritty. It sucks that we lost Dusk. It was an amazing club.
Yeah.
But speaking of Lost Highway, we're playing in Providence. Next weekend, we're playing with the Dogmatics and Stop Calling Me Frank in Plymouth, the New World Tavern on Saturday. And on Sunday, we're playing at Askew in Providence with a show that was supposed to be with the Delta Bombers until they fired their singer and canceled their United States tour. But we're playing with Four, i.e., Hank Four, son of Hank Three, grandson of Hank Williams.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
So. And a well-meaning friend of mine said, "You ought to do a Lost Highway poster and ask him to sign it." I was like, "What the fuck are you talking about? Fuck no. First of all, our Lost Highway doesn't have anything to do with Hank Williams. And it's like, you want to sign some other band's merch? Tell you what, I'll give you a flyer and you go ask him to sign it and duck."
Is that show in Plymouth that you're playing with the Dogmatics? Is that a daytime show or a
That's a
nighttime?
nighttime show.
That'll be fun.
There is a daytime show, Saturday, July 13th. Every year we do Diablo Gatto's Party at Porch Southern in Medford. This is the third year we've done it. I hope this year it doesn't rain. And it's a free car show and
Oh,
motorcycles and
yeah. I
comes at
remember
six
you
in
were
the
there.
afternoon.
Yeah.
And then we always have the Dogmatics. And this year it's Screaming Rebel Angels from New York, Laura Palmer, David.
Okay, I do get that reference.
She's a force of nature. It's a band from New York City we play with a lot. Screaming Rebel Angels, Dogmatics, us, and Girl with a Hawk.
Nice. Nice.
So now you should come to that because it's like afternoon. It's really
Yeah. I'm going to write
food's
that on my
great.
calendar for
I'll
sure, Joe.
remind you, the food's great. That, you know, Southern fried chicken, soul food, good bands, cool cars, indoor, outdoor. It's really fun.
Medford.
Medford.
Are you listening to a lot of music these days besides what you're working on?
Mostly when I'm in the gym, which I haven't been enough because I hurt my back. I found myself listening to a lot of Australian punk rock. I listen to stuff, you know, I listen to Spotify playlists and I'll hear something go, wow, what's that? Plague Vendor. Who are they? It's a band from LA called Plague Vendor. I really like that are kind of the front man's off the hook. They're kind of garage, but they also remind me of that early 2000s angular post-punk, like bands like Division of Laura Lee. Plague Vendor, I like a lot. They're from LA. Australia, The Chats, of course. I'm not as high on Emil and the Sniffers as other people are. I'm sure they're fun live. Cosmic Psychos, who've been around forever. Stiff Richards, fucking A. Lately, I've been listening to a lot of 90s West Coast gangster rap, revisiting Snoop and Dre and all of that stuff.
So you're listening to a lot of music. That's good.
I mean, I love music.
Yeah, I know that you worked as a writer for a long time, you know, and did a lot of reviews, and so you're like me, man. Like we're married to music, and there's no divorce in sight.
No, it's true.
Hey, Jesse, thank you, man.
Thank you. And thanks for your support and digging everything in, and not only your support of us, but your years of support for everyone. You know, without people like you, we're working in a vacuum.
It's my pleasure to do this, man. You know, I'm just here for you guys, man. You know, seriously, I'm here for the bands. And I love it, man. It's my way to stay in the business, you know.
It's a really cool podcast.
Thanks, man.
I gotta call Sal Baglio next.
So, let me just tell you, I had so much fun that day that you and Sal were at the studio down at New Alliance at the same time. It felt like I was with a couple of my cousins from East Boston or something. You know, it was a blast.
That dude is amazing. Talk about somebody who doesn't look back. Sal is constantly moving forward. And what an incredible talent that
Yeah,
is.
that amp, I got the new amplifier heads. I got to spend a little time with that because he's still making good music.
Oh,
There's no,
yeah.
yeah, he's got like four CDs out now with that band. That's crazy,
He's
man.
prolific, you
Yeah.
know? I mean, that first Amplifier Heads record, I fell in love with. And I called Lou and I said, you don't know who Sal Baglio is. You need to know and you need to hear this record. And that's how that
Yeah,
happened.
I know. I heard the story. You got him
You
his deal. You're the
know,
A&R guy, man.
it's not even deals. Can I say one more thing before we get off?
Of course. You could say two more things if you want.
This isn't about, I think there are some bands out there that look at working with Rumbar or Red on Red, rest in peace, Justine, or Rock Garden or whoever, you know, State Line, as getting signed. This isn't getting signed. There is no getting signed. Nobody's getting advances. You know, no, this isn't a business. It's a network, so much as it's a network of people with passion who are crazy enough to spend, you know, great amounts of their lives and effort in this little corner of gutter art that we call rock and roll. And
I
it's all
like that.
about
Gutter art. I like that.
that. I think that's kind of, I'm kind of paraphrasing Joe Strummer, who once said, oh, well, we're a shout from the gutter, you know? My favorite Joe Strummer quote, he was talking about seeing the Ramones for the first time. And he's like, it was a revelation, man. One, two, three, four. 2 minute songs, in and out. They didn't stop. They understood me. people have got things to do.
Dude, I don't know if I ever told you this, but I was at Club Lingerie in Hollywood in 1984 when I first went to LA, and I went to see the Del Fuegos, and I met Joe Strummer at that show.
How was he?
He was awesome, dude. He's an awesome guy. Like very low, very low key, you know? And he was really cool. Westerberg was there that night, and so was it David Lee Roth. They were all in the room at the same time.
That's amazing.
I'm like 22 years old, and I'm in a room with all these guys, and I'm like, what the fuck? They all came to see the Del Fuegos. It was insane, man.
I was in a room with Raquel Welch, daughter
Can't beat that.
Her daughter, Tawny Welch,
ooh,
and Little Richard at the same time. At an AIDS benefit, I was house crew. It was at Metro. And they were all awesome. I met Little Richard.
You met Little Richard? Wow.
He looked like he was made out of wax. Starstruck beyond words, because Little Richard's the punkest dude ever. I also did meet Joe Strummer. Again, house crew, the Pogues tour that he did. That
wow.
Spider Stacy. And a friend of mine asked if I could get him to sign my, you know, my, not my laminate, but my stick on, you know, all access patch. And he was really gnarly about it. I think he'd had a bit to drink and he wasn't very nice. But, you know, it'd been a long tour. So,
yeah.
Talking about writing, I'll give a shout out to the nicest big rock star I ever interviewed, hands down, Rob Halford.
Oh, the metal god. Nice.
Humble, funny, sweet, super cool.
Yeah, he is a really nice guy. I've never met him, but I've listened to tons of his interviews. He's just a sweet. Sweet is a good way to describe Rob Halford. I mean, that's crazy, but it's
true. And the biggest douchebag was Art Alexakis from Everclear.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, one of the river raves. He was just a dick.
Oh, God. Now you want me to, I want to think who the biggest dick I ever met was in the music
business. Exene was not particularly pleasant.
Brian Adams, I'd have to say, when I was backstage one time when I was working at A&M, he was so unfriendly. He didn't shake any of our hands, didn't say anything. He was just looking at us and just asking, like, is my record hit? You know, he had that kind of like fucking, he's got guys from his label there and he's just being a dick. Sorry, Brian Adams, but
that's
it's true.
Funny. You're I just stumbled on a very recent show at Wembley that he did with his band. It was outstanding.
Well, you know, he seems to have gotten nicer over the years, you know, which is good.
Well, you know, this is the other thing, man. Like in the 80s, there was kind of this thing where we kind of thought we were supposed to be assholes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And really arrogant and aloof and all that. And it's just not a way to be.
No.
Not a way to be at all. And no one cares. You know, like, you're really not that important at all.
It's true, Jesse. It's true. You, in fact, are important to me. And thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate your time very much. I always love to talk to you. It's never a short conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. Thanks for supporting the band and everything we do.
My pleasure, man. See, I told you we have lots of stuff to talk about. You often hear the expression the one and only. Well, that fits Jesse Mayer almost as much as anyone I know. He is an individual of one of a kind, without a doubt. The track we closed things out with, by the way, was called Too Far Gone. That's probably my favorite Diablo Gatto song. That's from the old Scratch EP, which Jesse, by the way, just hooked me up with a copy on vinyl. Man, when I threw that thing on the turntable, woo, sounds real good. I love vinyl. I love vinyl. Sounded fantastic. Diablo Gatto is a really good band. Really good. You should go out and see them. And Jesse Mayer, well, you know how I feel about him. All right. Thanks for coming on the show, my friend. You folks can reach me anytime at twistedrico@gmail.com. We also have Facebook, Threads, Instagram, X, and a YouTube page where you can actually watch the Zoom interview I did with Mr. Jesse Mayer. There's also that TikTok page at Twisted Rico for now, anyways. I heard they might be shutting down the TikToker, but I don't necessarily agree with that. I think they should leave it out there. I guess they think that China's spying on us, which is probably true, and they probably have been for a long time. Why take it out on all the people that go on TikTok and use that platform to promote, their whatever they're working on, whether it's their music, their art, whatever, or even themselves? I mean, look at how many people have gotten famous off social media just because they post photos of themselves. God, I wish social media was around when I was, young. Just kidding. All right. Please support this podcast. I'm kidding, but I'm not kidding. Please support this podcast at patreon.com/twistedrico. If you can't do that right now for even $1 a month, just tell one person about this podcast so we can continue to grow it organically as we have been. And that's what it's been. It's been an organic growth since we started in January 2019. And look at us now, 5 years later, still hanging in there, going strong, episode 308. All right, that's going to do it for this time, folks. So till the next time we say goodbye, this is Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. Keep the rock and roll alive.